Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Cities of the Plain by Cormac McCarthy, narrated by Frank Muller. This book is copyrighted 1998 by Cormac McCarthy. This recording is copyrighted 1998 by Recorded Books. It is the fall of 1952. John and Billy are 9 years apart in age, yet with a kinship greater than perhaps they know. They are cowboys on a New Mexico ranch, encroached upon from the north by the military at Alamogordo. To the south, always on the horizon, are the mountains of Mexico, looming over El Paso, Ciudad Juarez, and all the cities of the plain. These two men, marked by boyhood adventure and loss, now stand together in the still point between their vivid pasts and their uncertain futures, confronting a country that is changing, perhaps already changed, beyond recognition. And now, Cities of the Plain.
1. They stood in the doorway and stomped the rain from their boots and swung their hats and wiped the water from their faces. Out in the street, the rain slashed through the standing water, driving the gaudy red and green colors of the neon signs to wander and seethe, and rain danced on the steel tops of the cars parked along the curb.
"Damned if I ain't half drowned," Billy said. He swung his dripping hat. "Where's All-American Cowboy at?"
"He's done inside."
"Well, let's go. He'll have all them good fat ones picked out for hisself."
The whores in their shabby deshabille looked up from the shabby sofas where they sat. The place was all but empty. They stomped their boots again and crossed to the bar and stood and thumbed back their hats and propped their boots on the rail above the tiled drainway while the barman poured their whiskies. In the blood-red bar light and the drifting smoke, they raised their glasses briefly and nodded as if to salute some fourth companion now lost to them, and they tilted back the shots and set the empty glasses on the bar again and wiped their mouths with the backs of their hands. Troy jutted his chin at the barman and made a circling gesture with one finger at the empty glasses. The barman nodded.
"John Grady, you look like a goddamned wharf rat."
"I feel like one."
The barman poured their whiskies.
"I never seen it rain no harder. You want a beer back? Give us 3 beers.
You got one of them little darlings picked out?"
The boy shook his head.
"Which one you like, Troy?"
"I'm like you. I come down here for a fat woman, and that's what I'm having. I'm gonna tell you right now, cousin, when the mood comes on you for a fat woman, they just want nothing else satisfy.
I know the feeling well." "You better pick you one out, John Grady."
The boy turned and looked across the room at the whores.
"How about that old biggin' in the green pajamas?"
"Don't be putting him on my gal," said Troy. "You'll be the cause of a fight breaking out here in a minute."
"Go on, she's looking over here."
"They're all looking over here."
"Go on, I can tell she likes you."
"She'd bounce John Grady off the ceiling."
"Not the All-American Cowboy, she wouldn't. The cowboy'd stick like a cockaburr." "What about the one with the blue window curtain wrapped around her?"
"Don't pay no attention to him, John Grady. She looks like her face caught fire and they beat it out with a rake. I'm gonna say that blonde on the end is more your style."
Billy shook his head and reached for his whiskey.
"There ain't no reasoning with the man. He just ain't got no taste in women, and that's a mathematical fact."
"You stick with your old dad," said Troy. "He'll get you onto something with some substance to it. Parham yonder actually claimed that a man ought not to date anything he couldn't lift. Said what if the house caught fire?"
"Or the barn."
"Or the barn.
You remember the time we brought Clyde Stamp down here?"
"I do, and he was a man of judgment. Picked him out a gal with some genuine heft to her.
J.C. and them slipped old woman a couple of dollars to let him go back there and peek. They was going to take his picture, but they got to laughing and blew the deal.
We told Clyde he looked like a monkey fucking a football. I thought we was going to have him to whip. What about that one in the red yonder?"
"Don't listen to him, John Grady.
Value per pound on a dollar basis. He don't even want to consider a thing like that."
"You all go on,"
said John Grady. "Pick you one out."
"That's all right." "You see there, Troy, all you done is got the boy confused."
J.C. told everybody that Clyde fell in love with the old gal and wanted to take her back with him, but all they had was the pickup and they'd have had to send for the flatbed. By then, Clyde had sobered up and fell out of love, and J.C. said he wasn't taking him to no more whorehouses, said he hadn't acted in a manly and responsible fashion.
"You all go on," said John Grady. From the rear of the premises, he could hear the rain rattling on a metal roof. He ordered another shot of whiskey and stood turning the glass slowly on the polished wood and watching the room behind him in the yellowing glass of the old Brunswick back bar. One of the whores crossed the room and took him by the arm and asked him to buy her a drink, but he said he was only waiting for his friends. After a while, Troy came back and sat on the bar stool and ordered another whiskey. He sat with his hands folded on the bar before him like a man at church. He took a cigarette from his shirt pocket.
"I don't know, John Grady."
"What don't you know?"
"I don't know." The barman poured his whiskey. "Pour him another."
The barman poured. Another whore had come up to take John Grady's arm. The powder on her face had cracked like sizing.
"Tell her you got the clap," said Troy.
John Grady was speaking to her in Spanish. She tugged at his arm.
"Billy told that to one down here one time. She said that was all right. She had it, too."
He lit the cigarette with a 3rd Infantry Zippo lighter and laid the lighter on top of his cigarettes and blew smoke down along the polished wood and looked at John Grady. The whore had gone back to the sofa, and John Grady was studying something in the back bar glass. Troy turned and followed his gaze. A young girl of no more than 17, and perhaps younger, was sitting on the arm of the sofa with her hands cupped in her lap and her eyes cast down. She fussed with the hem of her gaudy dress like a schoolgirl. She looked up and looked toward them. Her long black hair fell across her shoulder, and she swept it slowly away with the back of her hand.
"She's a good-looking thing, ain't she?" Troy said.
John Grady nodded.
"Go on and get her."
"That's all right."
"Hell, go on."
"Here he comes." Billy stepped up to the bar and adjusted his hat.
"You want me to go get her?" said Troy.
"I can get her if I want her."
"Otra vez,"
said Billy. He turned and looked across the room.
"Go on," said Troy. "Hell, we'll wait on you."
"That little girl the one you're looking at, I bet she ain't 15.
"I bet she ain't either," said Troy.
"Get that one I had. She's 5 gated or I never rode."
The barman poured their whiskeys.
"She'll be back over there directly."
"That's all right."
Billy looked at Troy. He turned and picked up his glass and contemplated the reddish liquor welling at the brim and raised and drank it and took his money from his shirt pocket and jerked his chin at the watching barkeep.
"You all ready?"
he said.
"Yeah."
"Well, let's go get something to eat. I think it's fixing to quit raining. I don't hear it no more."
They walked up Ignacio Mejia to Juarez Avenue. The gutters ran with a grayish water, and the lights of the bars and cafes and curio shops bled slowly in the wet, black street. Shop owners called to them, and street vendors with jewelry and serapes sallied forth to attend them at either side. They crossed Juarez Avenue and went up Mejia to the Napoleon and sat at a table by the front window. A liveried waiter came and swept the stained white tablecloth with a hand broom.
"Caballeros," he said.
They ate steaks and drank coffee and listened to Troy's war stories and smoked and watched the ancient yellow taxicabs ford the water in the streets. They walked up Juarez Avenue to the bridge. The trolleys had quit running and the streets were all but empty of trade and traffic. The track shining in the wet lamplight ran on toward the gate shack and beyond to where they lay embedded in the bridge like great surgical clamps binding those disparate and fragile worlds, and the cloud cover had moved off down from the Franklins and south toward the dark shapes of the mountains of Mexico standing against the starlit sky. They crossed the bridge and pushed through the turnstile, each in turn, their hats cocked slightly, slightly drunk, and walked up South El Paso Street. It was still dark when John Grady woke him. He was up and dressed and had already been to the kitchen and back and had spoken to the horses, and he stood in the doorway of Billy's bunk room with a canvas curtain pushed back against the jamb and a cup of coffee in one hand.
"Hey, cowboy," he said. Billy groaned. "Let's go. You can sleep in the winter."
"Damn."
"Let's go. You've been laying there damn near 4 hours."
Billy sat up and swung his feet onto the floor and sat with his head in his hands.
"I don't see how you can lay there like that." "Damn if you ain't a cheerful son of a bitch in the morning. Where's my by God coffee at?"
"I ain't carrying you no coffee. Get your ass up from there. Grub's on the table."
Billy reached up and took his hat from a wall peg over the bed and put the hat on and squared it.
"Okay," he said, "I'm up."
John Grady walked back out up the barn bay toward the house. The horses nickered at him from their stalls as he passed.
"I know what time it is," he told them.
At the end of the barn, a length of hay rope hung from the loft overhead, and he drained the last of his coffee and slung the dregs from the cup and leaped up and batted the rope and set it swinging and went out. They were all at the table eating when Billy pushed open the door and came in. Socorro came and took the plate of biscuits and carried them to the oven and dumped them into a pan and put the pan in the warmer and took hot biscuits from the warmer and put them on the plate and carried the plate back to the table. On the table was a bowl of scrambled eggs and one of grits, and there was a plate of sausage and a boat of gravy and bowls of preserves and pico de gallo and butter and honey. Billy washed his face at the sink, and Socorro handed him the towel, and he dried his face and laid the towel on the counter and came to the table and stepped over the back of the empty chair and sat and reached for the eggs. Oren glanced at him over the top of his paper and continued reading. Billy spooned the eggs and set the bowl down and reached for the sausage.
"Morning, Oren," he said. "Morning, J.C.
J.C. looked up from his plate. "I guess you've been fighting that bear all night, too."
"Fighting that bear," said Billy.
He reached and took a biscuit and refolded the cloth back over the plate and reached for the butter.
"Let's see them eyes again," said J.C.
"Ain't nothing wrong with these eyes. Pass the salts yonder."
He spooned the hot sauce over his eggs.
"Fight fire with fire. Ain't that right, John Grady?"
An old man had come into the kitchen with his braces hanging. He wore an old-fashioned shirt of the kind the collar buttoned to, and it was open at the neck and no collar to it. He had just shaved, and there was shaving cream on his neck and on the lobe of one ear. John Grady pushed back his chair.
"Here, Mr. Johnson," he said. "Set here. I'm all done."
He rose with his plate to take it to the sink, but the old man waved him down and went on toward the stove.
"Set down," he said. "Set down. I'm just getting me some coffee."
Socorro unhooked one of the white porcelain mugs from the underside of the cabinet shelf and poured it and turned the handle facing out and handed it to the old man, and he took it and nodded and went back across the kitchen. He stopped at the table and spooned two huge scoops of sugar out of the bowl into his cup and left the room, taking the sugar spoon with him. John Grady put his cup and plate on the sideboard and got his lunch bucket off the counter and went out.
"What's wrong with him?" said J.C.
"Ain't nothing wrong with him," said Billy.
"I meant John Grady."
"I know who he meant."
Oren folded the paper and laid it on the table.
"Don't you all even start," he said. "Troy, you ready?"
"I'm ready."
They pushed back from the table and rose and went out. Billy sat picking his teeth. He looked at J.C.
"What are you doing this morning?"
"I'm going into town with the old man."
He nodded. Out in the yard, the truck started.
"Well," he said, "it's light enough to see, I reckon."
He rose and crossed the kitchen and got his lunch pail from the counter and went out. J.C. reached across the table and got the paper. John Grady was sitting behind the wheel of the idling truck. Billy got in and set the lunch pail on the floor and shut the door and looked at him.
"Well," he said, "you ready to put in a day's work for a day's wages?"
John Grady put the truck in gear and they pulled away down the drive.
"Daybreak to backbreak for a God-given dollar," said Billy. "I love this life." "You love this life, son?" "I love this life." "You do love this life, don't you? 'Cause by God, I love it. Just love it."
He reached into his shirt pocket and shook out a cigarette from the pack there and lit it with his lighter and sat smoking while they rolled down the drive through the long morning shadows of fence and post and oak tree. The sun was blinding white on the dusty windshield glass. Cattle standing along the fence called after the truck, and Billy studied them.
"Cows," he said.
They nooned on a grassy rise on the red clay ranges 10 miles south of the ranch house. Billy lay with his rolled jacket under his head and his hat over his eyes. He squinted out at the gray headlands of the Guadalupes, 80 miles to the west.
"I hate coming out here," he said. "Goddamn ground won't even hold a fence post."
John Grady sat cross-legged, chewing a weed stem. 20 miles to the south, a live belt of green ran down the Rio Grande Valley. In the foreground, fenced gray fields. Gray dust following a tractor and cultivator down the gray furrows of a fall cotton field.
"Mr. Johnson says the Army sent people out here with orders to survey 7 states in the southwest and find the sorriest land they could find and report back. And Mac's ranch was setting right in the middle of it."
Billy looked at John Grady and looked back at the mountains.
"You think that's true?" said John Grady.
"Hell, who knows?
J.C. says the old man is getting crazier and crazier."
"Well, he's still got more sense crazy than J.C.'s got sane, so what does that make J.C.?"
"I don't know.
There ain't nothing wrong with him. He's just old is all.
J.C. says he ain't been right since his daughter died."
"Well, there ain't no reason why he should be. He thought the world of her."
"Yeah.
Maybe we ought to ask Delbert. Get Delbert's view of things.
Delbert ain't as dumb as he looks."
"I hope to God he ain't. Anyway, the old man always had a few things peculiar about him, and he's still got 'em. This place ain't the same, and never will be. Maybe we've all got a little crazy. I guess if everybody went crazy together, nobody would notice. What do you think?"
John Grady leaned and spat between his teeth and put the stem back in his mouth.
"You liked her, didn't you?" "Awful well. She was as nice to me as anybody I ever knew."
A coyote came out of the brush and trotted along the crest of a rise 1/4 mile to the east.
"I want you to look at that son of a bitch," said Billy.
"Let me get the rifle."
"He'll be gone before he get done standing up."
The coyote trotted out along the ridge and stopped and looked back and then dropped off down the ridge into the brush again.
"What do you reckon he's doing out here in the middle of the day?"
"He probably wonders the same about you."
"You think he's seen us?"
"Well, I didn't see him walking headfirst into them nopal bushes yonder, so I don't expect he was completely blind."
John Grady watched for the coyote to reappear, but the coyote didn't.
"Funny thing," said Billy, "is I was fixing to quit about the time she took sick. I was ready to move on. After she died, I had a lot less reason to stay on, but I stayed anyways."
"I guess maybe you figured Mac needed you."
"Horse shit."
"How old was she?"
"I don't know. Late 30s, 40 maybe. You'd never have known it, though."
"You think he's getting over it?"
"Mac?"
"Yeah."
"No. You don't get over a woman like that. He ain't getting over nothing. He never will."
He sat and put his hat on and adjusted it.
"You ready, cousin?"
"Yeah."
He rose stiffly and reached down and got his lunch pail, and he swiped at the seat of his trousers with one hand and then bent and got his jacket. He looked at John Grady.
"There was an old wad he told me one time. He never knowed a woman raised on indoor plumbing to ever turn out worth a damn. She come up the hard way. Old man Johnson was never nothing but a cowboy, and you know what that pays. Mac met her at a church supper in Las Cruces when she was 17 years old, and that was all she wrote. He ain't going to be getting over it. Not now, not soon, not never."
It was dark when they got back. Billy rolled up the window of the truck and sat looking toward the house.
"I'm a wore out son, Buck," he said.
"You want to just leave the gear in the truck?"
"Let's bring in the come-along. It might rain."
"Might."
"And that box of staples, they'll rust up."
"I'll get 'em."
He got the stuff from the bed of the truck. The lights came on in the barn bay.
Billy was standing there, shaking his hand up and down. Every time I reach for that son of a bitch, I get shocked.
It's the nails in them boots.
Then why don't it shock my feet?
I don't know.
He hung the come-along on a nail and set the box of staples on a framing crossbrace just inside the door. The horses whinnied from their stalls. He went on down the barn bay and at the last stall pounded the flat of his hand against the stall door. There was an instant explosion against the boards on the other side. Dust drifted in the light. He looked back at Billy and grinned.
"Egg it on," said Billy. "He'll put a foot through that son of a bitch."
Joaquin stepped back with both hands atop the board he was leaning on and lowered his head as if he'd seen something in the corral too awful to watch. But he was only stepping back to spit, and he did so in his slow and contemplative way, and then stepped forward and looked through the boards again.
"Caballo," he said.
The shadow of the trotting horse passed across the boards and across his face and passed on. He shook his head. They walked on down to where some 2x12s were nailed and braced along the top of the corral and climbed up and sat with their boot heels wedged in the board below and smoked and watched John Grady work the colt.
"What does he want with that owl-headed son of a bitch anyway?"
Billy shook his head.
"Maybe it's like Max says, every man winds up with a horse that suits him. What is that thing he's got on his head?"
"It's called a cavesson halter."
"What's wrong with a plain hackamore?"
"You'd have to ask the cowboy."
Troy leaned and spat. He looked at Joaquin.
"Capiensis," he said.
Joaquin shrugged. He watched the horse circle the corral at the end of the lunge line.
"That horse has been broke with a bit," Troy said.
"Yeah."
"I guess he aims to break it and start over."
"Well," Billy said, "I got a suspicion that whatever it is he aims to do, he'll most likely get it done."
They watched the horse circle.
"He ain't training it for the circus, is he?"
"No, we had the circus yesterday evening when he forked up on it."
"How many times did he get thowed?"
"4.
"How many times did he get back up on it?"
"You know how many times."
"Is he supposed to be some sort of specialist in spoiled horses?"
"Let's go," Billy said. "He's liable to walk that son of a bitch all afternoon."
They went on toward the house.
"Ask Joaquin yonder," Billy said.
"Ask me what?"
"If the cowboy knows horses."
"The cowboy says he don't know nothing."
"I know it."
"He claims he just likes it and works hard at it."
"What do you think?"
said Billy. Joaquin shook his head.
"Joaquin thinks his methods is unorthodox."
"So does Mac."
Joaquin didn't answer till they reached the gate. Then he stopped and looked back at the corral. Finally, he said that it didn't make much difference if you liked horses or not if they didn't like you. He said the best trainers he ever knew, horses couldn't stay away from them. He said horses would follow Billy Sanchez to the outhouse and stand there and wait for him. When he got back from town, John Grady was not in the barn, and when he walked up to the house to get his supper, he was not there either. Troy was sitting at the table, picking his teeth. He sat down with his plate and reached for the salt and pepper.
"Where's everybody at?" he said.
"Orange just left. JC's gone out with his girl. John Grady, I reckon, is laid up in the bed."
"No, he ain't."
"Well, maybe he's gone off somewheres to think things over."
"What happened?"
"That horse fell backwards on him, like to broke his foot."
"Is he all right?"
"I reckon. They carried him into the doctor, him cussing and carrying on. Doctor wrapped it up and gave him a pair of crutches and told him to stay off of it."
"He's on crutches?"
"Yep, supposed to be."
"All this happened this afternoon?"
"Yep. It was as lively as you could ever wish for here for a while. Joaquin come over and got Orne, and he went down there and told him to come on, and he wouldn't do it. Orne said he thought he was going to have to whip him, hobbling around after the damned horse, wanting to get up on it again. Finally got him to take his boot off. Orne said another 2 minutes and they'd have had to cut it off of him."
Billy nodded his head and bit thoughtfully into a biscuit.
"He was ready to fight Orne?"
"Yep." Billy chewed. He shook his head.
"How bad is his foot?"
He sprained his ankle.
What did Max say?
Nothing. He's the one carried him into the doctor's.
I guess he can't do no wrong where Max's concerned.
You got that right.
Billy shook his head again. He reached for the salsa.
I miss every show that comes to town, he said. I guess this might whittle down his reputation as a pure deep peel or something, though, mightn't it?
I don't know if it will or not. Joaquin says he stood in one stirrup and rode the son of a bitch down like a tree.
What for?
I don't know. I reckon he just don't like to quit a horse.
He'd been asleep maybe an hour when the commotion and the dark of the barn bay woke him. He lay listening a minute, and then he rose and reached for the cord and pulled on the overhead light and put on his hat and stepped to the door and pushed back the curtain and looked out. The horse hove past a foot from his face and went hammering down the bay and turned and stood breathing and stamping in the dark.
Damn, he said.
Bud?
John Grady went limping past.
What the hell are you doing?
He hobbled on out of the lightfall. Billy stepped into the bay.
You are a goddamned idiot, ain't you? What in the hell is wrong with you?
The horse began to run again. He heard it coming and knew it was coming, but he'd no more than just got back inside the door frame before it exploded into the space of light from the single bulb in his cubicle, running with its mouth open and its eyes like eggs in its head.
God damn it, he said.
He got his pants off the iron footrail of his cot and pulled them on and squared his hat and stepped out again. The horse had started down the bay again. He flattened himself against the stall door next to his bunk room. The horse went by as if the barn were afire and slammed up against the door at the end of the bay and turned and stood shrieking.
God damn it, will you leave that squirrel-headed son of a bitch alone? What the hell's got into you?
John Grady came limping past into the dusty light again, trailing a loop of rope, and limped on out the other side.
You can't even see the rope, the son of a bitch, Billy called.
The horse came pounding down the far side of the bay. It was saddled, and the stirrups were kicking out. One of them must have caught on a board toward the far end where it turned in the thin slats of light from the yard lamp, because there was a crack of breaking wood and a clattering in the dark, and then the horse stood on its forefeet and jack-slammed the boards at the end of the barn. A minute later, the lights came on at the house. The dust in the barn drifted like smoke.
There you go, called Billy. The whole damn house is up.
The dark shape of the horse shifted in the barred light. It leaned its long neck and screamed. The door opened at the end of the barn. John Grady limped past again with the rope. Someone threw the light switch. Oren was standing there, flapping his hand about.
God damn it, he said. Why don't somebody fix that thing?
The crazed horse stood blinking at him 10 feet away. He looked at the horse and he looked at John Grady standing in the middle of the barn bay with the catch rope.
What in hell's thunder is going on out here? He said.
Go on, said Billy. Tell him something. I sure as hell don't have no answer for him.
The horse turned and trotted partway down the bay and stopped and stood.
Put the damn horse up, said Oren.
Let me have the rope, said Billy.
John Grady looked back at him.
You think I can't even catch him?
Go on, then. Catch him. I hope the son of a bitch runs over you.
One of you all catch him, said Oren, and let's quit this damn nonsense.
The door opened behind Oren, and Mr. Johnson stood there in his hat and boots and nightshirt.
Shut the door, Mr. Johnson, said Oren. Come in if you want.
John Grady dropped the loop over the horse's neck and walked the horse down along the rope and reached up through the loop and took hold of the trailing bridle reins and threw the rope off.
Don't get on that horse, said Oren.
It's my horse.
Well, you can tell that to Mac, then. He'll be out here in a minute.
Go on, bud, said Billy. Put the damn horse up like the man asked you.
John Grady looked at him, and he looked at Oren, and then he turned and led the horse back down the barn bay and put it up in the stall.
Bunch of damned ignorance, said Oren. Come on, Mr. Johnson. Damn.
The old man turned and went out, and Oren followed and pulled the door shut behind him. When John Grady came limping out of the stall, he was carrying the saddle by the horn, the stirrups dragging in the dirt. He crossed the bay toward the tack room. Billy leaned against the jamb, watching him.
When he came out of the tack room, he passed Billy without looking at him.
"You're really something," said Billy. "You know that?"
John Grady turned at the door of his bunk room, and he looked at Billy, and he looked down the hall of the lit barn and spat quietly in the dirt and looked at Billy again.
"It wasn't any of your business," he said. "Was it?"
Billy shook his head.
"I will be damned," he said.
In the mountains, they saw deer in the headlights, and in the headlights the deer were pale as ghosts and as soundless. They turned their red eyes toward this unreckoned sun and sidled and grouped and leapt the bar ditch by ones and twos. A small doe lost her footing on the macadam and scrabbled wildly and sank onto her hindquarters and rose again and vanished with the others into the chaparral beyond the roadside. Troy held the whiskey up to the dashlights to check the level in the bottle and unscrewed the cap and drank and screwed the cap back on and passed the bottle to Billy.
"Be no lack of deer to hunt down here, looks like."
Billy unscrewed the cap from the bottle and drank and sat watching the white line down the dark road.
"I don't doubt but what it's good country."
"You don't want to leave Mac?"
"Well, I don't know. Not without some cause to."
"Loyal to the outfit."
"It ain't just that. You need to find you a hole at some point. Hell, I'm 28 years old.
"You don't look it."
"Yeah?"
"You look 48. Pass a whiskey."
Billy peered out at the high desert. The bellied light wires raced against the night.
"They won't care for us drinking?"
"She don't particularly like it. But there ain't much she can do about it. Anyway, it ain't like we was gonna show up down there knee-walking drunk."
"Will your brother take a drink?"
Troy nodded solemnly.
"Quicker'n a minnow can swim a dipper."
Billy drank and handed over the bottle.
"What was the kid going to do?" said Troy.
"I don't know."
"Did you and him have a falling out?"
"No, he's all right. He just said he had something he needed to do."
"He can flat ride a horse, I'll say that."
"Yes, he can."
"He's a salty little booger."
"He's all right. He's just got his own notions about things."
"That horse he thinks so much of is just a damned outlaw, if you want my opinion."
Billy nodded.
"Yep."
"So what's he want with it?"
"I guess that's what he wants with it."
"You still think he's going to have it following him around like a dog?"
"Yeah, I think it."
"I'll believe it when I see it."
"You want to lay some money?"
Troy shook a cigarette from the pack on the dash and put it in his mouth and pushed in the lighter.
"I don't want to take your money."
"Hell, don't be backwards about taking my money."
"I think I'll pass." "He ain't gonna like them crutches."
"Not even a little bit."
"How long is he supposed to be on them?"
"I don't know, a couple of weeks. Doctor told him a sprain could be worse than a break."
"I'll bet he ain't on them a week."
"I'll bet he ain't either."
A jackrabbit froze in the road. Its red eye shone.
"Go on, dumbass," Billy said.
The rabbit made a soft thud under the truck. Troy took the lighter from the dashboard and lit his cigarette with it and put the lighter back in the receptacle.
"When I got out of the Army, I went up to Amarillo with Gene Edmonds for the rodeo and stock show. He'd fixed us up with dates and all. We were supposed to be at their house to pick him up at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it was after midnight before we left out of El Paso. Gene had a brand new Olds 88, and he pitched me the keys and told me to drive. Quick as we hit Highway 80, he looked over at me, told me to shower down on it. That thing would strictly motivate. I pushed it up to about 80, 85, still had about a yard of pedal left. He looked over again. I said, 'How fast do you want to go?' He said, 'Just whatever you feel comfortable with.' Hell, I didn't do nothing but roll her on up to about 110, and here we went. Old, long, flat road had about 600 miles of it in front of us. Well, there's all these jackrabbits in the road. They'd sit there and freeze in the lights. Blap, blap. I looked over at Gene, and I said, 'What do you want to do about these rabbits?' He looked at me, and he said, 'Rabbits? I mean, if you were looking for somebody to give a shit, I can tell you right now, it sure as hell wasn't Gene. He didn't care if syrup went to 30 cents a sop.' We pulled into a filling station at Dimmitt, Texas, just about daybreak.
Pulled up to the pumps and shut her down and sat there, and there was a car on the other side of the pumps, and the old boy that worked there was filling the tank and cleaning the windshield. Woman sitting there in the car. The old boy driving had gone in to take a leak or whatever. Anyway, we pulled in facing this other car, and I'm kind of laying there with my head back waiting on the old boy, and I wasn't even thinking about this woman, but I could see her. Just sitting there, sort of looking around. Well, directly she sat up and commenced to holler like she was being murdered. I mean, just a hollering. I raised up. I didn't know what had happened. She was looking over at us, and I thought Gene had done something. Exposed himself or something. You never knew what he was going to do. I looked at Gene, but he didn't know what the hell was going on any more than I did. Well, here come the big old boy out of the men's room, and I mean, he was a big son of a bitch, too. I got out and walked around the car. I thought I was going crazy. The Oldsmobile had this big oval-shaped grill in the front of it. It was like a big scoop. And when I got around to the front of the car, it was just packed completely full of jackrabbit heads. I mean, there was 100 of them jammed in there, and the front of the car, the bumper and all, just covered with blood and rabbit guts. And them rabbits, I reckon they'd sort of turned their heads away just at impact, because they was all looking out, eyes all crazy looking, teeth sideways, grinning. I can't tell you what it looked like. I come damn near hollering myself. I'd noticed the car was overheating, but I just put that down to the speed we was making. This old boy wanted to fight us over it. I said, damn, Sam, rabbits, you know? Hell. Gene got out and started mouthing at him, and I told him to get his ass back in the car and shut up. Old boy went over and told the woman to hush up and quit slobbering and all, but I like to never got him pacified. I started to just go on and hit the big son of a bitch and be done with it. Billy sat watching the night spool past. The roadside chaparral, the flat black scrim of the mountains cut into the star-blown desert sky above them. Troy smoked. He reached for the whiskey and unscrewed the cap and sat holding the bottle. I got discharged in San Diego. Took the first bus out. Me and another old boy got drunk on the bus and likely got throwed off. I got off in Tucson and went in a store and bought a new pair of Judson boots and a suit. I don't know what the hell I bought the suit for. I thought you was supposed to have one. I got on another bus and come on to El Paso and went up that evening to Alamogordo and got my horses. I wandered all over this country. Worked in Colorado, worked up in the Panhandle, got throwed in jail in this little old chicken shit town I won't even name it to you. State of Texas, though. State of Texas. I hadn't done nothing, just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I like to never got out of there. I'd gotten a fight with a Mexican and liked to kill him. I was in jail up there for 9 months to the day. I wouldn't have rode home for nothing. Time I got out and went to see about my horses, they'd been sold for the feed bill. I didn't care about the one, but I did the other because I'd had him a long time. Nobody seemed to know nothing about it. I knew if I grabbed the old boy, I'd be right back in the damn jail again. I asked all around. Finally, somebody told me they'd sold my horse out of the state. They thought the buyer was from Alabama or some damn place. I'd had that horse since I was 13 years old. I lost a horse in Mexico I was awful partial to, Billy said. I'd had him since I was 9. It's easy to do. What, lose a horse?
Troy had tipped the bottle up, and he drank and lowered it and screwed the cap back on and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and laid the bottle on the seat.
No, he said, get partial to one.
Half an hour later, they pulled off the highway and rumbled over the pipes of a cattle guard and drove up the mile-long dirt road to the ranch house. The porch light was on, and 3 heeler dogs came out and ran beside the truck, barking. Elton came out and stood on the porch with his hands in his back pockets and his hat on. They ate at a long table in the kitchen, passing bowls of hominy and okra and a great platter of fried steaks and biscuits.
"This is awful good, ma'am," Billy said.
Elton's wife looked at him.
You wouldn't mind not calling me ma'am, would you?
No, ma'am. It makes me feel like an old woman.
Yes, ma'am.
He can't help himself, Troy said.
That's all right, the woman said.
He never let me off that easy.
Being let off easy was never something you needed more of, the woman said.
I'll try not to say it, Billy said.
There was a 7-year-old girl at the table, and she watched them with wide eyes. They ate. After a while, she said,
What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with what?
saying ma'am?
Elton looked up. There ain't nothing wrong with it, honey. Your mama's just one of them modern kinds of women.
What's a modern kind of woman? Eat your supper, the woman said. If your daddy had his way, we wouldn't even have the wheel yet.
They sat in old cane-bottomed chairs on the porch, and Elton set the three glass tumblers on the board floor between his feet and unscrewed the cap from the bottle and poured three measures and put the cap back and stood the bottle on the floor and passed the glasses round and leaned back in his rocker.
Salute, he said.
He had turned off the porch light and they sat in the soft square of light from the window. He raised his glass to the light and looked through it like a chemist.
You won't guess who's back at Bell's, he said.
Don't even say her name.
Well, he did guess.
Who else would it be?
Elton leaned back in the chair and rocked. The dog stood in the yard at the foot of the steps looking up at him.
What, said Troy, did her old man finally run her off?
I don't know. She's supposed to be visiting. It's turned out to be kindly a long visit.
Yeah, for whatever consolation there might be in that.
It ain't no consolation.
Elton nodded.
You're right, he said, it ain't.
Billy sipped the whiskey and looked out at the shapes of the mountains. Stars were falling everywhere.
Rachel run smack into her in Alpine, said Elton. Little darling just smiled and hided like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth.
Troy sat leaning forward with his elbows on his knees, the glass in both hands before him. Elton rocked.
You remember we used to go down to Bloy's to try and pick up girls? That's where he met her at, camp meeting. That'll make you ponder the ways of God. He asked her out and she told him she wouldn't go out with a man that drank. He looked her straight in the eye and told her he didn't drink. She liked to fell over backwards. Well, I guess it come as something of a shock to her to meet an even bigger liar than what she was. But he told the naked truth. Of course, she called his hand on it, said she knew for a fact he drank, said everybody in Jeff Davis County knew he drank and drank plenty and was wild as a buck. He never batted an eye, said he used to, but he quit. She asked him when did he quit, and he said, I just now did. And she went out with him, and as far as I know, he never took another drink, till she quit him, of course. By then, he had a lot of catching up to do. Tell me about the evils of liquor. Liquor ain't nothing. But he was changed from that day.
Is she still as good-looking?
I don't know. I ain't seen her. Rachel said she was. Satan hath power to assume a pleasing form. And big blue eyes knew more ways to turn a man's head than the devil's grandmother. I don't know where they learned it at. Hell, she wasn't but 17.
They're born with it, Troy said. They don't have to learn it.
I hear you.
What they don't seem to learn is not to just run over the top of some poor son of a bitch for the pure enjoyment of it.
Billy sipped his whiskey.
Let me have your glass, Elton said.
He set it on the floor between his feet and poured the whiskey and recapped the bottle and reached and passed the glass across.
Thanks, said Billy. Were you in the war? Elton said.
No, I was 4F.
Elton nodded.
I tried to enlist 3 different times, but they wouldn't take me.
I know you did.
I tried to get overseas, but I spent the whole war at Camp Pendleton. Johnny fought all over the Pacific Theater. He had whole companies shot out from under him. Never got a scratch. I think it bothered him.
Troy handed across his glass, and Elton set it on the floor and poured it and passed it back. Then he poured his own. He sat back.
What are you looking at?
He asked the dog. The dog looked away.
The thing that bothers me, and I'll shut up about it, is that we had a hell of a row that morning, and I never had the chance to make it up. I told him to his face that he was a damn fool, which he was, and that the worst thing he could do to the old boy was to let him have her, which it was. I knew all about her by then. We liked to come to blows over it. I never told you that. It was bad. I never saw him alive again. I should have just kept out of it. Anybody in the state he was in, you can't talk to him no way. No use to try, even.
Troy watched him. You tell me, he said.
Yeah, I guess I did. I don't dream about him anymore. I used to, all the time. I'd have these conversations with him.
I thought you was going to get off the subject.
All right,
It still seems like about the only subject there is, though. Don't it?
He rose heavily from the chair with bottle and glass in hand.
Let's walk out to the barn. I'll show you the foal that Jones mare throwed you never did think much of. Just bring your all's glasses. I got the bottle.
They rode all morning through the open juniper country, keeping to the gravelly ridges. A storm was making up over the Sierra Viejas to the west and over the broad plain that ran south from the Guadalupes down around the Cuesta del Burro Range and on to Presidio and the border. They crossed the upper reaches of the creek at noon and sat among the yellow leaves and watched leaves turn and drift in a pool while they ate the lunch that Rachel had packed for them.
"Look at this," said Troy.
"What is it?"
"A tablecloth."
"Damn."
He poured coffee from a thermos into their cups. The turkey sandwiches they ate were wrapped in cloth.
"What's in the other thermos?"
"Soup."
"Soup?"
"Soup."
"Damn."
They ate.
"How long has he been manager down here?"
"About 2 years."
Billy nodded.
"Did he not offer to hire you on before now?"
"He did. I told him I didn't mind working with him, but I wasn't all that sure about working for him."
"What made you change your mind?"
"I ain't changed it. I'm just thinking about it."
They ate. Troy nodded down country.
"They say there's been a white man ambushed every mile of this draw."
Billy studied the country.
"Looks like they'd have learned to stay out of it."
When they'd done eating, Troy poured the rest of the coffee into their cups and screwed the cap back on the thermos and laid it by with the soup and the sandwich cloths and the still-folded tablecloth to pack back in the saddlebags. They sat sipping the coffee. The horses, standing downstream side by side, looked up from their drinking in the creek. They had wet leaves stuck to their noses.
"Alton's got his own notions about what happened," Troy said. "Johnny, if he hadn't have found that girl, would have found something else. You couldn't head him. Alton says he changed. He never changed. He was 4 years older than me. Not a lot of years. But he walked ground I'll never see. Glad not to see. People always said he was bullheaded, but it wasn't just that. He fought Daddy one time. He wasn't but 15. Fist fought him. Made the old man fight him. Told him to his face that he respected him and all, but that he wasn't going to take what he'd said. Something the old man had chewed him out over. I cried like a baby. He didn't cry. Kept getting up. Nose all busted and all. The old man kept telling him to stay down. Hell, the old man was crying. I hope I never see nothing like it again. I can think about it now, and it makes me sick. And there was nothing any mortal man could have done to have stopped it."
"What happened?"
"The old man finally walked off. He was beaten. He knew it. Johnny's standing there. Couldn't hardly stand up, calling to him to come back. The old man wouldn't even turn around. He just went on to the house."
Troy looked into the bottom of his cup. He slung the dregs out across the leaves.
"It wasn't just her. There's a kind of man that when he can't have what he wants, he won't take the next best thing, but the worst he can find. Alton thinks he was that kind, and maybe he was. But I think he loved that girl. I think he knew what she was, and he didn't care. I think it was his own self he was blind to. I think he was just lost. This world was never made for him. He'd outlived it before he could walk. Get married, hell, he couldn't even stand to wear lace-up shoes."
"You liked him, though."
Troy looked off down through the trees.
"Well," he said, "I don't guess like really says it. I can't talk about it. I wanted to be like him, but I wasn't. I tried."
"He was your dad's favorite, I reckon."
"Oh, yeah. It wasn't a problem with anybody. It was just known, accepted. Hell, wasn't even a contest. You ready?"
"I'm ready."
He rose. He placed the flat of his hand in the small of his back and stretched. He looked at Billy.
"I loved him," he said. "So did Alton. He couldn't not. That was all there was to it."
He folded the cloths under his arm together with the thermos bottles. They hadn't even looked to see what the soup was. He turned and looked back at Billy.
So how do you like this country?
I like it.
I do too. Always have.
So you coming down here?
No.
It was dusk when they rode into Fort Davis. Nighthawks were circling over the old parade grounds when they passed, and the sky over the mountains behind them was blood red. Elton was waiting with the truck and horse trailer in front of the Olympia Hotel. They unsaddled the horses in the graveled parking lot and put the saddles in the bed of the truck and wiped the horses down and loaded them in the trailer and went into the hotel and through the lobby to the coffee shop.
"How did you like that little horse?" said Elton.
"I liked him fine," said Billy. "We got along good."
They sat and studied the menus.
"What are you all having?" said Elton.
They left around 10 o'clock. Elton stood in the yard with his hands in his back pockets. He was still standing there, just the silhouette of him against the porch light, when they rounded the curve at the end of the drive and went on toward the highway. Billy drove. He looked over at Troy.
"You're going to stay awake, ain't you?"
"Yeah, I'm awake."
"You've done decided?"
"Yeah, I think so."
"We're going to have to go somewheres."
"Yeah, I know it."
"You ain't asked me what I thought."
"Well, you ain't coming down here unless I do, and I ain't, so what would be the use in me asking?"
Billy didn't answer. After a while, Troy said, "Hell, I knew I wasn't coming back down here."
"Yeah.
You go back home, and everything you wished was different is still the same, and everything you wished was the same is different."
"I know what you mean.
I think especially if you're the youngest. You wasn't the youngest in your family, was you?"
"No, I was the oldest."
"You don't want to be the youngest, I can tell you right now. There ain't no percentage in it."
They drove on through the mountains. About a mile past the intersection with Highway 166, there was a truckload of Mexicans pulled off onto the grass. They stood almost into the road, waving their hats. Billy slowed.
"The hell with that," said Troy.
Billy drove past. He looked in the rearview mirror, but he could see nothing but the dark of the road and the deep of the desert night. He pulled the truck slowly to a halt.
"Damn it, Parham," Troy said. "I know, I just can't do it. You're fixing to get us in a jackpot here, we won't get home till daylight."
"I know it."
He put the truck into reverse and began to grind slowly back down the highway, using the white line running from under the front of the truck to steer by. When the other truck hove into view alongside them, he could see that the right front tire was down. They gathered around the cab.
"Punchada," they said. "Tenemos una llanta punchada."
"Puedo verlo," said Billy.
He pulled off the road and climbed out. Troy lit a cigarette and shook his head. They needed a jack. Did they have a spare?
"Sí, por supuesto."
He got the jack out of the bed, and they carried it back to the truck and commenced to jack the front end up. They had two spares, and neither of them would hold air. They spelled each other at the antique tire pump. Finally, they raised up and looked at Billy. He got the tire tools out of the truck bed and came around and got the patch kit and a flashlight from under the seat. They carried one of the spares out into the road and laid it down and stood on it to break the bead. And then the man who'd taken the tools from Billy stepped forward and began to pry the tire up off the rim while the others watched. The inner tube that he snaked out of the tire's inner cavity was made of red rubber, and there was a whole plague of patches upon it. He laid it out on the macadam, and Billy trained the light over it.
"Hay parches sobre los parches," he said.
"Es verdad," the man said.
"La otra está peor."
One of the younger men manned the tire pump, and the tube bloated slowly up in the road and sat, hissing. He knelt and put his ear to the various leaks. Billy flipped open the tin lid of the patch can and thumbed a number of repairs it contained. Troy had climbed out of the truck, and he walked back and stood, smoking quietly and looking at the tire and the tube and the Mexicans. The Mexicans wheeled the blown tire around the side of the truck, and Billy put the light on it. There was a great ragged hole in the sidewall. It looked like it had been chewed by bulldogs. Troy spat quietly in the road. The Mexicans threw the tire up onto the bed of the truck. Billy took the stub of chalk from the patch kit and circled the leaks in the tube, and they unscrewed the valve stem from the valve and sat on the tube and then walked it down till it was dead flat. Then they sat in the road with the white line running past their elbows and the gaudy desert night overhead, the myriad constellations moving upon the blackness subtly as sea life, and they worked with the dull red shape of rubber in their laps, squatting like tailors or menders of nets. They scuffed the rubber with a little tin grater stamped onto the lid of the kit, and they laid on the patches and fired them with a match, one by one, till all were fused and all were done. When they had the tube pumped up again, they sat in the road in the quiet desert dark and listened.
Oye algo? Said Billy. Nada.
They sat listening. He unscrewed the valve stem again, and when they had the tube deflated, the man slid it down inside the tire and worked it around the rim and fitted the valve, and the boy came forward with the pump and began to pump up the tire. He was a long time pumping. When the bead popped on the rim, he stopped, and they unscrewed the hose from the valve, and the man took the valve stem from his mouth and screwed it into the hissing valve, and then they stepped back and looked at Billy. He spat and turned and walked back to the truck to get the tire gauge. Troy was asleep in the front seat. Billy got the gauge out of the glove box and walked back, and they gauged the tire and then rolled it over to the truck and slid it onto the hub and tightened down the lug nuts with a wrench made from a socket welded onto a length of heavy iron pipe. Then they let down the jack and pulled it from under the truck and handed it to Billy. He took the jack and tire tools and put the patch kit and the gauge in his shirt pocket and the flashlight in the back pocket of his jeans. Then they shook hands all the way around.
A donde van? Said Billy.
The man shrugged. He said they were going to Sanderson, Texas. He turned and looked off across the dark headlands to the east. The younger men stood about them.
Hay trabajo allá.
He shrugged again.
Espero que sí,
he said. He looked at Billy.
¿Es vaquero?
Sí, vaquero. The man nodded. It was a vaquero's country, and other men's troubles were alien to it, and that was about all that could be said. They shook hands again, and the Mexicans clambered aboard the truck, and the truck cranked and coughed and started and lumbered slowly out onto the roadway. The men and boys in the bed of the truck stood and raised their hands. We could see them above the dark hump of the cab against the deep burnt cobalt of the sky. The single taillight had a short in the wiring, and it winked on and off like a signal until the truck had rounded the curve and vanished. He put the jack and tools in the pickup and opened the door and nudged Troy awake.
Let's go, cowboy.
Troy sat and stared out at the empty road. He looked back behind them.
Where'd they go?
They're done gone.
What time is it, do you reckon?
I don't know.
He done being a Samaritan?
I'm done.
He leaned and opened the glove box door and put the patch kit and the tire gauge and the flashlight in and shut the door and started the engine.
Where were they headed? Troy said.
Sanderson.
Sanderson?
Yeah.
Where are they coming from?
I don't know. They didn't say.
I bet they ain't even going to Sanderson, Troy said.
Where do you think they're going?
Hell, who knows?
Why would anybody lie about going to Sanderson, Texas?
I don't know.
They drove on. Rounding a curve with a steep bank to the right of the road, there was a sudden white flare and a solid whump of a sound. The truck veered, the tires squealing. When they got stopped, they were halfway off the road into the bar ditch.
What in the hell? Said Troy. What in the hell?
A large owl lay cruciform across the driver's windshield of the truck. The laminate of the glass was belled in softly to hold him, and his wings were spread wide, and he lay in the concentric rings and rays of the wrecked glass like an enormous moth in a web. Billy shut off the engine. They sat looking at it. One of its feet shuddered and drew up into a claw and slowly relaxed again. And it moved its head slightly as if to better see them, and then it died. Troy opened the door and got out. Billy sat looking at the owl. Then he turned off the headlights and got out, too. The owl was all soft and downy. Its head slumped and rolled. It was soft and warm to the touch, and it felt loose inside its feathers.
He lifted it free and carried it over to the fence and hung it from the wires and came back. He sat in the truck and turned the lights on to judge if he could drive with the windshield in that condition or whether he might have to kick it out completely. There was a clear place in the lower right corner, and he thought he could see if he hunkered down and looked through the windshield there. Troy had walked up the road and was standing, taking a leak. He started the truck and pulled back onto the road. Troy had walked further up and was sitting in the roadside grass. He drove up and rolled down the window and looked at him.
"What's wrong with you?" he said.
"Nothing," Troy said.
"Are you ready to go?"
"Yeah."
He rose and walked around in front of the truck and got in. Billy looked over at him.
"You all right?"
"Yeah, I'm all right.
It was just an owl."
"I know, it ain't that."
"Well, what is it?"
Troy didn't answer. He pulled the shift lever in the floor down into first and let the clutch out. They moved down the highway. He could see pretty well. He could lean over and see through the glass on the other side of the division bar.
"Are you all right?" he said. "What is it?"
Troy sat looking out the window at the passing darkness.
"Just everything," he said. "Just every goddamn thing. Hell, don't pay no attention to me. I ought not to drink whiskey in the first place."
They drove on to Van Horn and stopped for gas and coffee, and by then the country that Troy had grown up in and that he thought he might go back to and where his dead brother was buried was all behind them, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
"Mac will have a few things to say when he sees the truck."
Billy nodded.
"I might be able to run into town and get it fixed in the morning."
"What do you reckon it'll cost?"
"I don't know."
"You want to just split it?"
"That would suit me."
"All right."
"You sure you're okay?"
"Yeah,